Welcome to Podnuts, a computer repair podcast, episode number 196. I'm your host, Jeff Alish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Just give you a little heads up, we will have the phone lines open at about 5 p.m. So towards the end of the show, and we'll answer your questions. So if you've got them, bring them out. All right, let me introduce the co-host. We have Marvin B. from MB Systems. Marvin, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty darn good.
Oh, my. Thank you, Marvin. That was another song I had to listen to going to the Toronto On Convention, just so you guys know. And yes, he was singing that. Okay, so also joining us today, we have Robert Lavelle from Uppercase Computer Solutions and BusyBench. Robert, how you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good. Good to have you. And it's been a while.
Oh, it's been a little bit. Yeah, I've been a little busy.
Busy is good, though. Busy is good.
Absolutely.
All right, Marvin, why don't you let's go ahead and start off the show and share a tip or story that we could learn from.
Well, the only thing that I really have to add from last week that I did with a couple of customers was I had to do a change in a backup system where a customer finally was asking for a proper cloud backup. But I don't like doing cloud backup without some sort of local backup as well.
Right.
And the solution that they were using, when we looked at pricing out the cloud version, it was going to cost about $300 a month for them. So we looked at a couple of other solutions, and I finally settled on one of the all-in-one solutions where I can do the on-site backup, and then it backs up from the device to the cloud, and the price came out to be about $130 or something like that. It actually took about a month for it to get through all the approval process, but they finally did it. And one of the reasons that they were hesitating so much is this is a not-for-profit that that I've been working with for quite some number of years. And they had to get their approval from their board members.
Okay.
Their board members are all corporate people that have gone through some of these things where they've changed softwares, they've changed services, and it's always, I guess it's always been a nightmare for them, and they didn't want that to happen to this not-for-profit group. So I had to convince them, look, I've done this many times. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to go in and provide a solution that I'll be in 4 o'clock one night, transfer all their stuff to the new device, have them switched over and working the next morning. I'll come in, pick up the old device. That's it. And they didn't quite believe that I could do it that way. And part of it was because they're running off of a NAS. They don't run off as a server. So the NAS was going to serve as their file sharing and their internal backup and then push off to the cloud backup. So I had some referrals. And the best thing is I just gave them direct referrals to the people I work with at the company. And the referrals were able to say, you know what? That was the smoothest transition we ever did. You can't go wrong with that. And that's what convinced them to finally do the service. So not only, you know, did it turn out that, you know, did I have the process in place, but I had experiences with customers who were happy enough to, you know, stand up and vouch for me and say, yes, what he says, he does, trust him. And that was my feel good story for the week.
That's really good. Now, which service did you end up going with?
It's another Datto service, but I did the Datto NAS.
Okay. And now, what does that consist of? Because I know we've looked at the Datto bare metal restore products and things like that.
Right. In the, it's basically just a regular, you know, NAS box, but it's got the Datto software built in to where it just does a direct connection to the Datto cloud. So nice. You can create the shares, and they use it just like they would a Synology or a Netgear ReadyNAS box or anything like that. But the software for Datto is built in that you can schedule some backups, just like you would on a, you know, Datto Alto or Cirrus device that will push up to the cloud and do all the same features, providing you with, you know, the email saying it was backed up. You can go into the cloud and have the 1 year retention. That was one of the big features that they liked is, you know, their previous services that they looked at were only 30 days.
Right.
So with the Datto, I could, you know, tell them, look, your data is going to be there for a full year. And that's what they liked.
That's really good. And I think that's going to become more and more important for a lot of businesses. You need that retention to go back because maybe a year is not as far as people are going to go back, but how many stories have we heard where people have gone back, needed to go back and find a certain file from like 6 months ago, and it's not there?
A lot. And even with the file, you know, versioning that you can get with stuff, well, you know, it might be 2 months that, especially a lot of my law firms, that they go back and finally they're looking at a case that has been postponed or stalled or whatever, and they're looking at a document, and that document's from 3 months ago, and they realize that's not the right version.
Right.
We need a version that had something before that. So for law firms especially, and one of the great things about the Datto is not only do they have a 1 year retention, they've got 3 year, 5 year, and just recently they added infinite retention.
Wow.
Now, I haven't looked at it yet, but you know, to be able to provide, you know, not just infinite, because, you know, I guess in some degree Amazon Cloud and all the others can say they offer, you know, infinite retention with their cold storage or whatever, but you don't get versioning back that far. You don't get the different, you know, endpoints, you know, where I can go back and look at, you know, this particular backup 1 year ago, 3 years ago. So it'll be interesting. I'll probably be looking at that maybe next year as one of my law firms. They will have now rolled over into their second year, and they may want to extend their versions that they keep available.
That's good to hear. Yeah. And especially, so a lot of people out there will say, oh, companies don't want to spend the money, but you've got a nonprofit that's still, yeah, they're not spending $300 a month, but they're spending half that and still getting a great product and service that's going to protect them. And even if you think about, you know, we think about things like infinite, and the first thing that came to my mind was taxes, where they always tell you, you need to keep 7 years of all your documentation for your taxes. So that in case the IRS comes knocking, you've got that information available. And this would be a great way, especially with the digital age we're in now, versus how a lot of us have done for years with just paper files and hoping our house never catches on fire.
Right. Well, it's, you know, what's interesting is this not-for-profit is, I think, following a trend that a lot of businesses will start to follow. Yes, people are reluctant to spend the money, but when they know they have to, they will. You know, once this not-for-profit got to a point where, you know, they're keeping all of their projects, all of their, you know, donation campaigns, you know, they're keeping their annual folders, but they run out of space. And so they're looking to archive that someplace or have it available. And I don't know if this particular company ran into a situation where they were missing a file, but I do know that I work with their database vendor, and he's always frustrated because, you know, they need to go back and find a particular donor information from, you know, X number of years ago, because, you know, they may need it for their tax purposes,
right?
If they're giving a lot of money. And so they, you know, look, I gave you money back in 2012. You have my information, you know, that sort of a thing. So they're just as likely to need this as anybody else.
That's good. I'm sure people will be glad to hear that those services are still going to be, I mean, they're becoming better and better. They're becoming less expensive, and it's good that people will be needing those services, because that's something we can definitely provide. All right. And Robert, what kind of tips or stories do you have for us since the last time, which is months and months ago, that we actually saw you on the show?
Oh, well, you know, I'm doing a ton of the business management side of things, not as much as the tech stuff anymore, as we grow and, you know, take over the world and whatnot. So I just say something that happened to me this last week that I thought would be really unique and that I wanted to share on the show was here in our local town, there was a new computer shop that opened up, and I had been driving by and I saw the signs pop up and it's like, oh, that's interesting. I've never heard of them. And years ago, typically the way that I would go about it, and I think the way that most techs go about it is there's a little bit of hostility when you see another tech shop open up and, you know, you immediately like, you know, you get that feeling like, oh, they're going to run me out of business, or they're going to, you know, I'm not as good, or there's a competition there. A few years back, I kind of learned that the market's big enough. If your clients love you, they're going to stay with you. Price isn't going to kill everything. And that's ultimately what is in the back of our minds, is that, oh, well, they're going to have a lower price than me. And so my customers are always going to go there. And that's not true. When we bought out one of our competitors and we took their owner and he became our manager, all of his clientele followed him. Or a huge chunk of them, at least, I'd say probably at least 60%, because those people, and they would call around town. That's the crazy thing. They were calling around town to other computer shops to see if he was there when that business got bought out. And they ended up finding us and going, oh, yeah, I've worked with him. I love him. You know, and then they came over here. Now, we did change pricing a little bit when we took over that company. We did raise prices about 20% because we were about 50% under market value at that time. And we were doing things for an absurdly low price. And so we raised the prices and that didn't matter. They were loyal customers that loved the service and respected us. And so once you get over that hurdle of, okay, everyone is out there to compete. I mean, if you're living in an area that's got a population above 500 people, the market's big enough for a couple shops. Okay. And realistically, since I've been in business, I've seen 5 computer shops flare into existence and disappear in under a year. Okay, so that you've got to kind of take that mindset. So what I did was I went in and I think it was like their first day open. I went in and I said, hey, I'm here to help you out. Is there any type of resource I could share with you? I own this shop. I would love to, you know, I met with a great bookkeeper. I've got some designers that are awesome. I've got some payroll people that are great. I would love to talk to you and give you these resources, because I've noticed that moving forward and finding strategic network partners is way more powerful than trying to compete with all of these different shops. So a few of our subcontractors that have come and gone, and we see them kind of floating around. They're like the one man shows that drive around and you'll see them. I'll introduce myself to them and say, hey, you know, I would be happy to, you know, throw some work your way. But you know, when these types of clients, which we're moving primarily into commercial, when those types of clients do, you know, come up, you know, think of us. That's, you know, and I'll do the same for you. What is your ideal client look like? And they'll kind of tell me. Now, I learned going into the shop, I was a little, even though, you know, I'm one of the bigger shops in town, I'm still nervous. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what these guys are. I don't know, you know, what they're bringing to the market. But I just went in with a smile and a handshake. And I said, hey, you know, what are you guys doing? And come to find out, they're primarily cell phone, and we don't do anything with cell phone. So they want to do a little bit of laptop and they want to do primarily cell phone. So immediately that fatigue level dropped. We're not competing. We can be friends. It's no big deal. And even if we were competing, we can kind of help each other out. And that's how I got my manager, was his business, and why we decided to buy them out when his dad got ready to retire, was we would kind of offload some of our extra work to them. We would want another shop. If we get a customer that's in that's super impatient, right? Just, oh, I need to get it done today. It needs to happen, needs to happen, needs to happen. And we're swamped and our benches are full and we know we cannot provide that service. We would like to have a shop that we can trust and that isn't going to necessarily, and even if they do steal the client, we know that client, it's going to be fine in the long run, because they're going to send us clients, we're going to send them clients, and it'll be okay, but that client will be taken care of. And so that's what we did with Tony's shop. The one that we had bought out was, if we were slammed, we would send the customer there. And we had a really good relationship, even though we were in a competing market. And so I kind of learned that, and it went over incredibly well. They were super, you know, super pleased that I showed up. And I kind of explained to them, I said, when I first opened in the Valley here, I was actually getting emails from a couple of the other smaller shops that were in that mentality. And I mean, these were brutal emails, lots and lots of swear words and, you know, you should not be in town and you're too young to be running a business. It didn't stop me, but it definitely kind of ruined my week, you know?
Right.
And that's the way that I presented it. I said, this is the way I was treated when I came to this town. I don't want you guys to be treated this way. I want you to know that even though we're in the same market, we don't have to be enemies. Here's a business card. If you ever need anything, a resource or a hand, hey, you need help hanging shelves, let me know. I'll be over here. I've got a van full of tools. I'll be happy to help. And so it went over really good. So now I've got a friend instead of an enemy in the market, and I'm going to drop by. We've got this whole marketing thing coming up where we're going to drop off some cookies and stuff. So I'm going to drop off some stuff for him later on. And I've just noticed that it's a lot easier to grow your business with kindness than it is to be bitter and lock yourself in a room and pretend that that market doesn't exist and that there's other people out there. Because the people that are out there that are willing to step out of their comfort zone and shake a hand are more likely the ones that are going to be successful.
Absolutely. That's an awesome story. And I think I wish a lot of technicians and business owners out there would get that, because everybody can look at their skill set, whether it's through their employees or themselves, for what they're doing, and know that they're good at a handful of things. The rest of the stuff, they're like, I can get by. But if you can have somebody that's out there that does, that's an expert in that one thing, and you guys can trade business that way, that makes perfect sense.
That is absolute truth. And I was actually just on the phone the other day with someone had called. I had made a couple comments on a YouTube video. I can't remember where it was, a YouTube video somewhere that said, don't start a computer repair shop. IT is dead. It's a waste of time. And it immediately enraged me. And so I updated my Google Plus profile and I said, hey, you know, don't listen to this. If you guys want to start a business, you'll always second guess yourself. Just do it. If you fail, cool, move on with your life, but at least try. And I ended up getting just swarms of these comments of people going, hey, thanks for, you know, saying something, you know. And this one guy actually submitted a help ticket. He looked me up and looked at my business, submitted a help ticket to my company, and wanted to talk to me. And he asked me, you know, hey, how do I get clients? You know, I'm really good at this, I'm really good at that. And I could right away tell that he was a good tech, but not a good salesman. And I basically told him, I said, you need to be brutally honest with yourself. There are things, I run multiple business and I absolutely suck at certain things, but I'm honest with myself about those. And that's where my team players come in. Like Tony, I just do not have the aptitude to do what he does with hardware. And I am openly blunt about that. If a customer comes in and goes, you know, I need this done to my motherboard and I need this fan replaced, I immediately say, you know what? I'm going to be totally honest. I'm not smart enough to do this. Tony is our rock star. Let's have you talk to him. Once you get over that barrier that you can wear every single hat, it's a lot easier, because you don't have to necessarily pretend to be something you're not, and you can focus on what you're good at.
Absolutely. No, that's great advice right there. I really hope that people take that to heart. And it's funny because I keep watching these videos, not watching through the whole thing, but I keep seeing these videos pop up on YouTube. Just like you said, IT is dead. Yes, that's why we do a weekly show about the computer repair business and talk to literally hundreds to thousands of techs all the time. And it's going fine for a lot of people. Now, the naysayers out there that say it's not working, you know what? They're right. And the ones that say that it is working, you know what? They're right.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
That's good stuff, man. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Okay. What have I been working on? Not too much. I've been working on not working. I've just had some normal customer things where I had a customer, longtime customer, call me up. He wanted to learn. He just got a new Samsung Galaxy S7, I think. And he went from a flip phone to a smartphone. So what does he do? He doesn't know how to use a lot of the things, even though they taught him how to do certain things in the store. He calls me, wants my expertise. So I go over there. We had that. And then we had to change a couple things with, yes, an AOL password. And I know I just swore, but yes, people still use AOL out there, and that's what they've been using for years, and they're used to it. So anyways, his account a while back had gotten compromised. So we basically had to go in, and he had already changed the password, but he wanted to have a little bit of consistency between his different email accounts that he had, the one just created for the phone and the one for his AOL account. So I helped him with these things. I spent an hour with him, got paid for it. And it was actually kind of nice. Normally, I am not the type of person. I wouldn't say that I would love to sit down with people and actually show them things. But in this particular case, I actually enjoyed it, which was surprising. I'm the kind of guy, even though I'm somewhat outgoing, that would rather sit in my office working on things and call it a day. But that's just me. So I was kind of surprised that I actually liked teaching him how to do these different things and doing some of these different things. And you get paid an hourly rate, and it's kind of nice. So other than that, I did have another customer who picked up their data recovery finally, and they were happy with that. So that worked out real good. They actually I'd recovered the data from an old XP machine, an old Toshiba laptop, I believe it was, and finally got most of the data back. There was a few corrupt files, but nothing major. And he had a camera or a flash card that came from a Sony camera, it looks like. And I can't remember the Sony. It's one of those long rectangle, weird shaped ones that Sony proprietary, right? And so he brings this thing, and I'm looking to get the data off of it because he thought he had an infection on her. There was no infection. I pulled the data off, but I'm looking at this thing, and it was a 64 meg card. I had to double look because I was like going, wait a minute, I'm looking for gigs, right? No. Literally, this card was so old. It was a 64 megabyte Sony disk card. And so I was able to pull the files and stuff off of that, which it just cracked me up. But other than that, everything's been pretty quiet as far as business is. I don't answer as many phone calls as I used to because I'm busy in other areas. So I'm fine with that. But anyways, that is what I have been up to. So I don't have any other tips than basically what these guys have already shared, which I think both of them, it's just nuggets of gold in how to look at things in a certain way that not everybody will take that step back and say, you know what? They're right. And I need to look at some things and maybe the way I'm doing things and kind of change that up a little bit. Or you can be that nutso person that runs around like a chicken with their head cut off, bouncing from wall to wall, grabbing your fire extinguisher, putting out fires all the time and going, man, I really hate this part of the job. This really sucks. And sometimes sitting down and going, I really like this part of the job and this job makes it fun, or this part of my business, this makes it fun. You need to learn to, like Robert said, just be honest with yourself. You're not going to be good at everything, and that's okay. And even if you are good at everything, quote unquote, then sometimes you need to look at what you actually enjoy doing. And that really makes a difference, because there are certain jobs that come in that I actually still to this day, after doing it for years and years, enjoy doing. And then there's other ones where I go, yeah, I'd rather stick a fork in my eye than have to deal with this again, ever. But, you know, again, so different strokes for different folks. All right, I think we'll move on. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. This episode is brought to you by Podnuts Daily. Now, I just want to give a shout out to anyone that wants to come on the show, which Marvin and Robert have both been on Podnuts Daily, talking about certain things, whether it be network tools or their businesses, you know, things that they do in their business. And so I want to put that shout out there. We have somebody that's actually come on board, which is Paco LeBron, and he is scheduling my guests. So appreciate Paco doing that. So if you guys want to be on either Podnuts Daily or this show as a technician and kind of get the flow of the show, it's a round table, then contact Paco over at guest@podnuts.com. Yeah, it's a new email address we just created. So it's guest@podnuts.com. Check that out. Coordinate with him. He's got my calendar information. He sets all that stuff up, and we're going to try to get some more people in there, because that's where the time crunch is really coming, where I don't have the time to communicate back and forth like I would like to. I still will answer every email with something, and most of the emails end up coming on the show anyway. So we've got all that. But anyways, that being that. All right, so let's move into our main topic. And we're going to start off, because this topic actually came from someone that had sent me an email. We answered his question a few months back, and I said, hey, is there any topics that you would like covered? And so he sent me an email back, and here's what it says. All right, where do you hire techs? I'm in my 12th year of business and have never had to go look for a tech. I've always had someone in mind whenever the need comes up. I've struggled this time finding a good tech to work for me in my store. I'm also in a small town. with a population around 7,500. So there's not much to choose from, Mike. Thank you for the email, Mike. And hopefully we're going to get into our major topic or discussion here today. And where do you hire techs and what do you look for in a tech? Because one of the things that I've seen on the forums as of late is people talking about their employees and mostly not good. There's a few employees that people are like, oh yeah, this guy's a superstar and they're doing the right thing all the time. And what I've explained, especially for, not always, but sometimes for what we're paying these technicians and for what their job, you know, number one, we need to make sure that they know exactly what their job is and not be so prim and proper that if they're asked to do something, they don't want to do it because they think it's beneath them. But if that's written up in a contract ahead of time, you will be required to do X, Y, and Z from time to time. But most of the time, you will be doing this. Again, just like our customers, we need to set those expectations. So you need to set the expectations for the employees coming in. But one of the reasons I reached out to Robert, because he obviously runs his own shop and he's had to hire and fire employees. That's the way it is. And Marvin, who we all know, has also had employees and he's had to fire those from time to time. And now he works with a lot of subcontractors and stuff too. But even from the subcontractor standpoint, you're still looking for somebody that's going to represent your business, whether an employee or a subcontractor, they're still representing you in some form or fashion. So, Marvin, do you want to talk about that first story where you actually wanted to fire a tech and your wife said, no, don't.
Well, actually it was my last employee story, around, I think it was 2009 or 2010 maybe, but it was around there where I was down to one employee and I had just started doing a lot of remote work. And what had started to happen in my area with my customers, most of my customers I've had for a long time, so it wasn't like I was churning out tons and tons of new business, and I needed the technicians to be able to go do the stuff that, you know, not that it was beneath me, but, you know, the daily stuff, the boots on the ground. I need you to set up a workstation. I need you to go move this person. I need you, you know, those types of things. One of the problems that I was having was that when I didn't have something specific for the tech to do, they would just kind of sit around. And it was frustrating. I mean, so much to the point where I had a tech that actually went out to a customer and they were doing some network diagnostics and they were trying to figure out why a station couldn't connect to a network or something, which they were down in Miami. So for those of you that don't know, Fort Lauderdale and Miami look really close on the map, but parts of Miami, I mean, it's about, you know, 50 minutes to an hour to most parts of Miami. So I send the tech down there. He couldn't figure it out. And for some reason, could not get a hold of me. I was either busy or on the phone or something. So the tech just sat down on the couch at the customer's place. And, did nothing until I was able to get back in touch with them. So needless to say, I was starting to get more and more frustrated with my techs. You know, sitting down, you know, whether it's at a customer's place or in my office even, you know, part of what I expected was, if I don't have something for you to do specific, you need to be doing whatever it is you can to learn the customers as best as possible. Learn their software. If I don't have you working on their business software, you need to at least go on the website, learn about it. A lot of stuff that we do is based on customer line of business software. So it's not just your everyday, you know, load up Windows and fix viruses. It's, you know, you've got to know their case management system because they're going to call up and say, I can't merge this, you know, this file of petition, you know, motion to amend, you know, all this attorney speech stuff that we have to know. And they wouldn't do that. Back at that time, I was requiring, you know, that they stay up to date on their certifications.
Okay.
Wouldn't do that. Ah. So, you know, I'm at the point where it's costing more to have a tech sit around than it would be for me to just figure out a way to do it or hire a subcontractor or whatever. So I got to the point where, you know, I dreaded walking into the office because I just didn't want to look at them.
And you were the owner and you dreaded walking in your own office.
And I don't know exactly what happened, but the wife finally said to me one day where she goes, "You really hate going over there." I said, "Yes, I do." And she goes, "I think I understand now." She goes, "You're more frustrated with your own tech than you are with your customers or the work that needs to be done. Go ahead and fire him." Because she was an advocate of, he's a nice guy, you need him, you know, we just need to find a way to work with him. And I just told her, I said, I don't have the time or the inclination to work with somebody who's, you know, not able to motivate themselves,
right?
Not able to self-direct themselves, which is one of the hardest things in this industry. Techs are motivated to do what they want, but not what they're expected or not what they're needed to do. And that's, I think, you know, part of the frustration that a lot of people have is, you know, yeah, there's a ton of techs out there, but they're not out there to do the work that we need them to do.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that I just, after I let go of the last one, I said, you know what, until I absolutely have to, I'm not hiring another tech.
Right.
I'll subcontract out. I'll do as much as I can remotely. And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, I can do a lot remotely.
Right.
So it's a very interesting time that we're in right now, because with things going virtual, things going cloud, you know, we're going to lose a lot of that, but we still have to have boots on the ground. We still have to go visit people. We still have to do things on site, and we need people for that. So it's going to be interesting. So I'll let Rob go and talk about the actual hiring and firing, and then I'll add in, I guess, what I do for subcontractors after that.
Okay, that sounds good. So Robert, what types of things do you go through when you, or what do you look for in a tech when you're going to hire them? And go ahead and let us know some stories and different things that go on, as comfortable as you are with sharing that information.
Oh, absolutely. That has changed dramatically since when I very first started. When I first started, I had a kind of the perception that I need a rock star tech, and I need someone who's done everything, and they're a multi-tool in my business. And then that shifted. I got rid of that because most of the technicians were a little bit older than me. And I started my business when I think I was like 19 going on 20. I learned that when you hire these older techs, they've got a lot of preconceived notions as the way that things are. And they don't necessarily keep up on current events, and they don't necessarily know what best practices and stuff like that, because they, you know, they learned that IT stuff back when, you know, tape drives were you know what I mean?
And easy, so there, Rob. Easy.
And I know I'm treading lightly. I'm between Jeff and you. I'm like, I don't know what I can say. So I learned that I butted heads too much of them. I hired an older gentleman, and it was just nonstop, and it didn't work out. And so from that point, I kind of weighed out an idea of, okay, well, then I need to hire younger guys. Well, younger guys don't have experience, right? So now you've got this double-edged sword. You can either get experience and butt heads, or get younger guys that are willing to learn but don't have any experience and are most likely going to break stuff. So I kind of took it upon myself as, okay, well, when I hire this guy and I have him break down a laptop, I'm probably going to have to buy that motherboard twice. We'll consider that part of his training, blah, blah, blah. So what I ended up doing was I ended up stockpiling broken laptops and stuff. And when I would get a new tech, I would have him, you know, do some demo work on it. And I would point out, basically have kind of like a lab for him. And even when we got Tony, even though Tony ran a shop 2 years longer than me, I said, you know what, let's make sure that you're, because we were doing way more hardware work than he was. And he just, you know, chomped right through it. It was fine. And so from that point, I was like, okay, well, you know, that's kind of what I want. And I was doing that for a while, but now I've kind of shifted gears. So most end users that walk into the store, you can literally pull anyone off the street and tell them what to say And as long as they're presentable and they're social and outgoing, that's fine. You can leave the actual heavy lifting to a knowledgeable tech at the back. I've noticed that more sales happen with people who are more charismatic, people who are more outgoing, not so socially awkward, those types of people. So I've kind of shifted gears. I feel that based on the knowledge that I've gained over the last few years, that you can train just about anyone to be a tech, but you can't train someone to be outgoing, social, pick up on social cues, things like that. So what I'm actually looking for is I'm looking for intelligent people, people who have got troubleshooting skills. If you can use Google and you can troubleshoot, you can basically be a tech with enough direction. And that's kind of the name of the game. How well can you use Google, and be able to decipher what's happening? Because just because you can Google something doesn't mean you know what you're doing. But if you can read a forum or read, a guideline and understand those steps and realize how those different people are getting to that resolution, then, you can work with that person. So what I've shifted gears to is actually hiring, and this is what I'm looking for currently, is someone who is outgoing that is going to make my customers get that warm, fuzzy feeling when they walk in and when they leave. Because ultimately, the job's going to get done. I've got Tony in the back. I've got Chris in the back. They're both rock stars. They're going to get the repair done. They're going to get it done great. But the customer isn't going to see them sitting at the bench, specifically using non-marring tools and not scratching it and doing all that stuff. They don't really care. They just care of the experience and how well the repair is done. So I've already got the, okay, cool, the repair is going to get done right, but I want them to have that good atmosphere. So I've done a lot as far as shaping my business, and this is a completely different topic in itself, but a lot of computer shops are very janky when you walk in. They're very, like a couple of them that I had bought out, there's garbage and fast food wrappers everywhere and stuff. And it gives you this perception of, they're not too professional. And that was actually what I was just talking to you guys about, that organization is a key to success, keeping things labeled and clean, vacuumed. And when people walk into my store, I have, I got a little Amazon Echo, and it plays some, coffee house music, and it builds a nice atmosphere. And I've got plants everywhere, and they walk in, they get that good feeling. But then they walk up to a tech who is socially awkward, and there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. The world takes all types, but some people, and this breaks down to being honest with yourself, some people are really good at being technical. Some people are really good at talking to people. And I think I'm somewhere in between there, kind of. Some days I've had a lot of coffee and I'm like, I can be technical. And other days I just want to talk to people. So I'm still trying to find the middle ground.
It's funny because I just live by making things up as I go.
So basically I've had my biggest issue is, and it's almost shocking, is, basic little stuff like my techs know better than to sit on a couch and do nothing. They know if you're sitting there and the customer's billing you, if you can't get a hold of me, continue to look, continue to dig into it. Do not stop. I don't care if you're going to fail and you're going to fail. Don't stop looking busy. Keep trying. You know?
I can't imagine not even trying. That just blows my mind. Just
sitting, like, I can't grasp that. And there's lots and lots of contingencies that I have in place. Like if one tech is stumped and he calls another tech, if that tech isn't available, he calls another tech. And that was kind of like a guideline that I put in place when everyone's hired, is I don't care that you're off. If there is an ongoing project, you need to respond to texts or calls on your days off, because it could be a critical thing where that customer is down or their network's down or something like that. You can answer a 10-second text. Like, you can do that. And they agree to that. And they're like, okay, that's cool. And I said, if I have to pay you, 10 seconds worth of labor, I will do that. That's fine. But my customers are going to be taken care of. And so that's kind of agreed. And I can call people, whenever there's, something that happens like that. But my biggest issue as of currently is I need to find people, and I also need to find people who are reliable. And so I've got a couple that are just awesome, show up to work perfectly. I had one tech that was recommended to me by another tech that worked here, and I absolutely loved him. I absolutely adored him. He did a great job. He was never sitting around on his phone or messing, doing stuff that he wasn't supposed to. He was always looking to keep himself busy. He was either cleaning or talking to people, being social. He was just awesome. But he had a horrible flaw, And that horrible flaw was not being able to get out of bed in the morning, and he wasn't able to get to work. And so, you know, we're 4 months into his employment, and he's had like 6 no-call, no-shows. And it just, it hurts, because I've talked to him, I brought him in, and I had physical, and my girlfriend works HR. So she runs me through these, and she's actually been to college for that. So she runs me through these different scenarios of, okay, don't say this, don't say that. You need to have a write-up. It needs to do this. You know, you need to be by law, and you need to talk to him, and you have to, you know, this is how you reprimand them, and don't make them feel, you know, don't belittle them and stuff like that. So we go through that whole process, and I'm just like, man, I really like this guy. I don't want to get rid of him. And the dynamic between him and my other staff was awesome. Like, we were all best friends doing a job, you know, and everyone was happy. There was no, you know, angst with pay or anything like that. It was just, it was perfect, you know. But one day, I was on site with another tech, and we were doing, I can't remember what we were doing, but one of my lead tech, Tony, was swamped. And he said, hey, you know, whenever you can get back to the office, I could really use a hand. And I texted him back. I said, well, where's such and such? And he said, yeah, he didn't show up today again. And I you can't let one apple spoil the whole batch. And right. So I just called him. He didn't answer his phone. I said, don't bother coming in tomorrow. You know, you're no longer employed here. I'll have your check here tomorrow. And it hurt me. Like, it just pit in my stomach. Just, oh, I can't believe I just had to do that. But it had to happen. And you know, they understand, and the rest of the staff is like, they get it. And it kind of sets that guideline of, no, that's not okay. You can't do that. And so that's, I mean, it's going to hurt you more than anything, but try your best to not, you know, business is business, right? Like, you gotta keep going. But at the same time, I think it depends on the market. If you're looking for more technical people, because I've already got those positions filled, right? Like, I've got my hardware guy that's a rock star, and he sits in the back and does his job. Then I've got my on-site guy who's really good with networking and great with customers, and he does his thing. And I've got me who's somewhere in between all of it and business management, and I can handle customers. But now I need someone who is incredibly social for the front desk, and later right. on I'm going to need a really good marketing person. So you can't expect these people to wear all the hats. And I think, and I want to share this specifically. When I started my business, I was micromanaging everything, literally everything. Like, and it's just, I was completely obsessed about every little thing. There was, oh, there's water marks on the window. I got to, you know, scrub those out. And I've got to do, you know, the floor's got to be perfect and all this stuff. And micromanaging every little aspect isn't going to, that's not how you get successful. If you follow any of these big CEOs on Facebook or Twitter, like Richard Branson, he's the CEO of, I think it's Virgin Empire. I follow him all the time because, and it's, I doubt it's him writing that content, but there's these little snippets on there, right? That really make you kind of think outside the box. One, being honest with yourself. You're not good at everything. No one is. And the only way to get ahead is to build a team. And if you don't get out of your own way and accept that, you're just going to be staying exactly where you are until you give up. And so, and even if it isn't an employee, I've noticed that joining BNI or joining some of these local groups and stuff, I was able to socialize with other businesses and get that perspective that I'm not alone. And once you realize that, hey, we're all human, we all feel the same way, we all hate hiring people, we all hate firing people, you know, you start to get a little bit more information, and you start to feel a little more comfortable in your skin, and you start realizing, you know what, it's okay. I can train this person. I actually just read an article. It was a couple. I can't remember the names of them. It was how we took our conjoined monthly income from 2,000 to 150,000 a month. And I read that. I was like, wow, how'd they do that? Are they some MLM scam? Like, what's going on? And they said, what we did was we went to one of those business seminars, and the number one thing that they reinforce is get out of your own way. Stop thinking you can do everything, because you can't. You're just lying to yourself. And it's not that you can't. Okay, I take that back. You can do everything, but in an 8-hour day, unless you want to run yourself ragged, you can't. If you want to be happy, and happiness is a key element of success there, unless you want to be miserable, then you need to get out of your way and let someone else help you. And yes, there is a cost to happiness. Unfortunately, there is. In order for me to not have to get up at 8 a.m. in the morning, it cost me about $35 an hour. And that's, you know, having a couple texts rolling in the morning. If you get past that, you can finally start getting into the, okay, well, I'm not stressed out about that customer today. I don't need to be somewhere at 8 a.m. Everything seems okay today. I mean, it could be better, but all right, cool. How am I going to grow my business? How am I going to get out of my own way and make this thing better than it is? And so for the last 6 months, because I was in that same point, I was in that point where I was just hating life and I couldn't get out of this rut. And I sat down with a business analyst, and she was actually in my B&I group. And I had sat down with her. I said, you know, I feel like I'm running ragged here. Like I'm working 16 hours a day. I've been doing that for 3 months. I haven't taken a vacation in 2 years. I don't even take Sundays off. You know, the stores close on Sunday, but I take Sunday to do marketing. She goes, well, you know, it's a real simple equation. Like, get out of your own way. Let someone else do it. And I said, well, no, I've got all this anxiety. I've got to train them, and I've got to, you know, they're not going to do the job right. She goes, yes. So what? I said, well, yeah, but then customers are going to be pissed. Well, yeah, so what? Like, eventually there's only going to be a couple, and then that employee is going to learn, and then that employee is going to be awesome.
Right.
And so once you kind of get over that anxiety, you're like, oh, well, yeah, well, let's hire some people. And that was the moral of that article. And the number one tip that they gave was, we should have hired people 3 years ago, because they would have been making $100,000 a month. Because they took all of that time that they were spending sending out emails and responding and building social media profiles and putting boots on the ground, outsourcing that to their staff, and able to actually focus on big picture, like, okay, where's our money going? How can we optimize our workflow? And then the money starts coming in. So I think that's kind of what my take on that is there's a bigger picture there. And as long as you're aware of the bigger picture and you're not weighted down by the micromanaging, because it took me 3 years to get past that. It did. It took me 3 years of thinking I was the best thing that ever happened to myself, and that, you know, and that no one could ever do a job better than me, to realize that there are people out there, they're really good at what they do. And if they're trained properly and you spend a little bit of time with them, you won't have to do that job anymore. And now I'm at a point where I'm like, I sit here and I'm thinking, man, who can I hire to do that? Like, I don't want to. If I spend 20 minutes and train them how to do that, I don't need to do that either. And so now I'm in that mindset, which is a little bit different than where I was, you know, 7 years ago.
That's good. That's real good. Now, let me ask you one more question though. So, and you've gave a great scenario of what you're looking for, mindset and all that kind of stuff. Now, in today's day and age, where do you look for techs to hire? Like, if you had to hire somebody right now, what places do you go? Are there places online? Is it just through things like B&I, or where do you find these techs that, and when you're looking at them, what type of criteria are you looking at to go, that person's going to fit, other than, yeah, okay, I need somebody that's going to be upfront and be a people person. Do you go through an interview process? What types of things do you do?
So I originally started doing the Craigslist thing. I would just put a listing out, and okay. I noticed, and it was fine doing the big net, because you get a lot of fish with the big net. You're just not going to get the best fish. And so I was getting a lot of people. There's different types of mindsets when you're going into a job. So if you've owned your own business, or you've been into college and you've got, you know, you know what you want, you're going to be selective as to where you're going to want to invest yourself. And so that's the higher tier of the market. Most people that are applying for these positions think computers are blinking magic boxes and need a job. And so that's kind of what you're dealing with is, oh, I think I could do computer stuff. I mean, that's cool. I've seen stuff on the web. Yeah, okay, I can do that. And that's not really what you're looking for. And once you get into IT and you do it long enough, you realize that it's just like any other job. And so the magic wears off and you need people that are willing to invest. So right now, and I feel horrible saying this, I actually snipe them from big box stores. Because they've already been trained in customer service, and they typically know the market at its current state. So, for example, there is a feel horrible saying.
I wouldn't feel bad at all, because I'm just thinking about it. Most of those people do not stay there for a career in a big box store.
Exactly. And so you can go to places like these office supply stores, and I'm not going to name them, obviously, because I actually had a job at one of those office supply stores. And I was incredibly knowledgeable, and I ended up leaving because I hated the work. It wasn't because I wasn't, you know, it just sucked. And so most of these office supply stores train all of these people on, you know, how the printers work, how networking works, what's the best laptop. They understand the operating system and basic customer service stuff. And that's what I'm looking for. The tech stuff can come later. When we get some free time, I can work on that. And so what I look for when I go into these places is I ask them some general questions. So it's kind of like a hidden interview, I guess. Kind of. So I'll walk up to like a laptop or a computer and they'll walk up to me first. The first thing I notice is who notices me. So who is aware enough to say, hey, that is a new customer that hasn't been attended or worked with, and he needs attention. Who is willing to cross that ice breaking barrier, come up to me cold and say, hey, what can I do for you? That's the first step. Okay. So it's almost like an impromptu interview. Okay. Then at that point, I kind of challenge their knowledge a little bit. Right. And I'm not going to lie. Some of these stores is just hilarious. Some of the garbage they feed these people.
Oh,
I
know.
So, and it's not so wrong.
It's not their fault. It really isn't.
I was at one electronics store. I'm not going to mention. It's a pretty big one. And I was asking about hard drives and it was just so hilarious. I was just looking at them like, wow, they train you people. I feel so bad for you. But I'll wait for them to come up to me and then I'll ask them some impromptu stuff. I'll say, what do you think about this? And then obviously there is a sales element for them. So they are going to try to push whatever they're fed in that business. And that's their job. And I respect that. You know, they're doing their job. And so I pay attention to the cues of which they were trained and things to point out. Like if I look at a printer and they're like, and they'll ask me key questions like, okay, are you looking to print on both sides of the paper? I immediately can tell, okay, well, they're asking me, the customer, they want to focus in on the product that I need. Okay, that's detail oriented. And then I'll kind of take cues. If they say really, really dumb stuff, like socially, you know, really bad things, like they swear when they talk, or they say things that might offend me, I know that they're not going to be a good fit because they haven't gotten to that point in their life where they realize you don't say those in polite conversation.
Right.
And so I'll kind of move on to the next person. And so that's kind of the direction that I'm going right now. Unfortunately, it's a little bit slower because it's not like you can get a business's entire staff there to interview them all with random questions. But at the same time, it's on my terms, right? So when I get some free time and I'm like, you know what, I can swing by that store for about 20 minutes or so. I'll swing by and kind of look around a little bit and see who's there. And the other week, actually, I found someone that was actually a manager there, and there's no way I could pay him what they're paying him. But I'm like, man, I want that guy. Like, that's the guy I want. Can I afford him? Can I make this happen? And can I be persuasive enough to make him want to quit his job? Now, most people working at these office supply stores and stuff, they get paid minimum wage. They're working on concrete floors. They never get to sit down. It's brutal. And you're dealing with, you know, Joe Blow, the public, all day long, 24/7. And they're massive, massive foot traffic. So you're getting just bombarded all day long. We get maybe 15 people a day in our store. You're not going to get fatigued from that. You're okay with that in an 8-hour period. You're doing 100 people and you're talking to 4 people at the same time. It's a little overwhelming. And by the time you get home, you just want to go to bed. So that's kind of where I look. That's where I'm looking. And that's a little bit of advice is you might just want to, you know, if you've got a decent wage that you're willing to pay this person, and you're serious about it, you have to kind of take it, look at it in both sides. Are you willing to quit your job to work for you? If all you were doing it was just on a whim, like, oh, we'll try them out for a week. You have to be sure that you're willing to actually hire that person and then have a formal interview with them. But getting the kind of the nitty gritty, like, do I even want to talk to this person? Because when you start doing mass amounts of interviews like I've done where they're just planned one after the other, before they even walk in the room, just go, I don't even want to talk to you. Like, go away. It's not even going to happen. You get at least past that stage so you can kind of whittle it down. So I'm at the stage where I've got 3 or 4 people here locally that I've noticed in other stores that I would really like to hire. And so I'm kind of casually, when I get time, kind of talking to them. I'll come back in. I'll ask them a couple more questions. And they have absolutely no idea that they're being interviewed. But at the same time, they're not feeling uncomfortable. So I'm getting to see them in their natural kind of...
Right.
You know, their element, right? Where they're in their sales element versus when they come in and they're shaky and they've got their resume and they're trying to say all the right things and they're nervous because they want the job. No, I don't want you to feel uncomfortable. And so I've just noticed that kind of works for me. And I don't know if that's great for everyone, but it's kind of a neat angle, I would say.
I love it Robert, because it is out of the box thinking, and that those are the types of things that people do that succeed because they're willing to try something new. Now, before we go on, I want to take Marvin for a second. And Marvin, I want you to talk about what do you look for and where do you find the subcontractors that you use in your business?
Let me first go back and add on to what I said about finding passes.
You're breaking up. Of course.
You got to turn those torrents off there, Marvin.
I'm all good. No, it's the country music in the background.
You need some load balancing switches there. Spotify's taking your internet down, bro.
Sorry, Shania Twain was really blasting in my right ear here. What I wanted to say was going back to when I was looking for technicians, I think what Rob did was great for his scenario. For my scenario, I wouldn't have gone anywhere near a box store to talk to a tech because the way that they were taught and the things that they were doing was so much on the consumer side of things. I needed techs that could walk into a law firm, walk into a business, and be a little bit different. So
hold on. Disclaimer here. You're exactly right. I would never hire a big box store person for business support. I'm talking consumer only.
No, myself. I understand. I just wanted to.
So you are absolutely right on that. 100%.
So the places that I looked were actually local colleges, and there's a ton down here with the information technology tracks and things of that nature that have their job boards. And so I actually worked with a couple of those places. And when I needed an entry level tech, I would look there.
Okay.
Somebody who's coming out that's looking to learn and ready to work, and they're looking for a corporate environment. Now I couldn't provide that per se, but I could get them out working with businesses and working in corporate worlds, and so I looked for that. And then I also got a lot of my referrals from other consultants and software vendors that when, I needed somebody, I could ask them, what other techs do they know that are doing what I do? And so we would, contact other technicians that, whether they were doing it on their own or working for somebody who, worked with our line of business applications, worked in the law industry, worked with the auto industry when I was doing that. So I got a lot of it that way. I found that when I was advertising in, Career Builder, which they got bought by, I don't know who they are now, but that was our local thing, Career Builder, Monsters, Craigslist. I had whittled down my initial checklist so much that, my administrative person, when they would have to go through all the resumes, we weeded out, if you had no certifications, you didn't get through. If you had too many certifications, you didn't get through.
Okay.
If you worked at there was a local help desk here, I didn't consider you for that. So there was all those types of things. So when I started moving into getting more subcontractors, I was able to continue getting the referrals from the other consultants and the software vendors that I worked with, but I was also able to start utilizing my personal network that I have built up with the other technicians that I knew in the area. So I could either start using them or people that they knew, because they would go into companies where techs were not happy, looking to work someplace else. And they would always ask, hey, do you know anybody looking to hire? And so we just kind of ourselves started sending resumes around to each other so that the guys and gals that I work with, my personal Geek Squad network, we would simply send resumes back and forth. Hey, do you know anybody, looking for this tech, worked at this law firm for 5 years, things aren't working out, he wants to leave. And so between ourselves, we were able to build up our own little tech referral network when we needed stuff. From the subcontracting side, I've actually hired a tech from another tech that used OnForce.
Okay.
And OnForce, if for those who don't know, is one of those field services referral groups where you basically can list out the type of job you need in the area you need, and technicians that are listed on that program contact you to bid for the job or whatever. And I needed a tech in another city. I called my buddy that I worked with, and he couldn't do it. He goes, "Do you mind if I send somebody else?" And I said, "Yeah, go ahead." So come to find out, he used this service to send out a tech. And at first I was like, "How dare you, you know, send out one of your guys?" But he didn't have a guy that could do what I needed. So he used that service, OnForce, to hire a tech. Now, I've not actually used that myself, but I did hire the tech that he subbed out through that.
Okay.
Because he turned out to know what he was doing. So I've recommended other people go use OnForce when you need subcontractors and they're either not in your area or, you know, or you need somebody to do something that you're not good at, which I've always subbed out that type of stuff. I don't do printers. I don't do websites. I don't do SharePoint. So I always sub all that stuff out. The other thing I do is all the groups that I belong to. And, you know, you just basically inquire, you know, amongst the group, who do you know? The last year I've been a member of ASCII, and they are specifically really good at helping you find techs because they know, you know, many, many techs in every city. So basically you send in a request to them, you know, here's what I need, here's the city, here's the dates, blah, blah, blah. They will send out the request on your behalf. And so all the other techs and companies, part of ASCII, will start contacting you. And ASCII's pretty good at self-policing the good techs and the bad. So if somebody, you know, does a great job, you're going to get good referrals. If somebody does a bad job, you're going to know about it.
Okay.
So ASCII is one of those places where they will self-police, and if somebody does a bad job, they're going to get branded.
Okay. Yeah. Those are great. So job boards at colleges.
ASCII. Well, not just the job boards. I don't actually go to the colleges myself and look at the boards.
Okay.
But you get in contact with the person that runs those job boards.
Gotcha. Okay.
Some of them are placement centers where they actually, you know, as techs graduate, the school down here is Kaiser University. They've got a huge tech department. And so they've got a placement office where as the techs get close to graduation, they will start looking to pair up jobs. Now, a lot of corporate companies will basically advertise their jobs there. So the placement officers will know if a person's going to be, you know, good for a corporate job, or maybe they don't want to sit in an office all day for the same company, but hey, they may work for, you know, for Marvin over at MB Systems. They're good tech. They're good with people, you know, that sort of thing. Cause you know, just like everybody else, I'm looking for not just a technical side of it. You know, I need a tech who can, you know, converse properly with the customer, listen to what the customer needs, do the job, and be able to verify with the customer, did I do this job right? Are you happy? Good. Thank you very much.
That's good. The networking and all that stuff. So I think between the two of you guys have come up with some very interesting ways and good ways to find and hire techs, either subcontractor-wise or even full-time. There are definitely plenty of, and even Marvin, you said, there's schools out there that are still graduating people in IT, even though IT is dead, right?
Yeah.
So people are still going to school for that. And again, something I wouldn't have necessarily thought of to actually go to those schools, because you would think that those people want to come out and get into the corporate world, like you were saying, but they might be a good fit for something else, because even a lot of those people that come out and graduate, they eventually will go into business for themselves. They might do the corporate gig for a while, and then they go, you know what? I can do this on my own. I've got my own ways of doing things that I enjoy, and I can do this myself. And so, well,
what's interesting about those things is not all of them are, you know, 22-year-old kids, you know, just starting out. Sometimes they're 30, 40-year-olds who are looking for a career change.
Right.
And, you know, they've been in the workforce. You know, it's not that they can't, you know, get a job. It's that they're here retooling themselves for a new industry. And a lot of times those older graduates are going to have those personal skills that we're looking for. They're going to have that sense of responsibility. They know to show up to work every day, that they're expected to.
Right.
You know, if they're going to get a paycheck, they need to be there, stuff like that. So that was one of the things that, you know, I've hired a couple of older people from the schools. Granted, I knew going in that I'm probably only going to have that person 1 to 2 years because, yes, I may hire them for an entry-level position, knowing that they're going to want to grow and move on and, you know, own their own business or move into a higher-paying corporate gig, you know, that sort of thing. So if you know what your expectations are both for yourself and for your tech, you can do that. And that worked well for me for, you know, the first 10 years or so of my business as I added techs and did that. It was just when I got to the point where work kind of slowed down, I didn't need the, you know, expertise level. I just needed that entry-level tech to do this. That's where I ran into entry-level techs having, you know, no motivation. And, you know, I didn't want the tech that could just Google at that point. I needed a tech that could, you know, was willing to sit and try to figure things out and, you know, do that stuff on his own time, just not Google while they're at the customer site.
Exactly right. There should be no downtime. You're working an 8-hour day. And Robert, you were saying this earlier that, listen, people are generally, when we're talking about technicians, they're sitting in an air-conditioned office and they're either typing away on a computer or they're doing some manual labor, turning a screwdriver, whatever. None of it is that hard. And the reason I say that is because I come from a background where I've done everything from working on vehicles, building them, remodeling, whatever. And so I got to a point, I've had several businesses where I was swinging a hammer and I said, you know what? I really don't want to do this when I'm 60, but I can carry that light little laptop up to my office and tear it apart. No problem, because all the pieces are nice and light.
I mean, I grew up on a ranch. So like, you know, in the summers I would, you know, buck hay bales and sit out there, you know, and doing this physical labor to make, you know, at the time, I think it was $7 an hour or something. And so I'm out there sweating in the, you know, the sun, you know, for 2 months out of the year doing that, or I'm, you know, driving a tractor, or I'm helping doing roofing, or, you know, that's all. And honestly, I have a higher respect for the people that do physical labor because I think they should be paid more. The techs that I hire, it bugs me, and I try to not let it bug me, that they've got it really easy. Like, I'm asking you to push the talk button and to say the company name into the phone, and I want you to take out the garbage. I'm not asking you to go out in the 102 weather right now and paint the side of the building. I'm not asking you to go on the roof. Actually, I'm not even asking you to take a short lunch. You get an hour-long lunch. I just want you to take out the trash and be nice to the customers. Now, to me, that doesn't seem like a very difficult thing. So, I mean, it's just... it's frustrating.
Sure.
But at the same time, we live in a society of entitlement. And unfortunately, my generation is, you know, we all went to college and we deserve to be paid $45 an hour because, you know, I stared at a book and, you know, I was flirty with my teacher, you know, and that's not how the world works. So, yeah, I tend to get a little frustrated and I some days if I'm really kind of, and I can super relate to what Marvin was saying about that. I don't even want to see your face today. I felt that way a couple times this last week, and I try my best. Emotion and business are like oil and water. You don't mix them together because all that's going to happen is a bunch of disaster. And so if I'm really frustrated, I'll just say, okay, I'm going to take a long lunch today. I need to go and chill out. Or if I know I need to reprimand someone, I don't want to be emotional, and I will go and take a walk, or I'll just chill out and then I'll attack it as a business owner. But yeah, I can totally relate to all of that, Ben.
I definitely appreciate all the insight. I think it's 10 after 5. I think what we're going to do is we've got a couple emails and we're going to go ahead and open up the phone line. So if you have a comment or a question, you can call the number and it's 697-0162. And you can talk to us right live on the internet or the air or whatever you want to call it. And so let me go into a couple of emails that came in. All right, this is kind of a rant, but I think this is good for the show because kind of relates to what we're talking about with different mentalities of different techs, depending on where they're at. This is from Patrick. He says, working with other techs. I enjoy the show. I like the part about why I should pay when my neighbor's kid does it for free. I think we mentioned that last week in our show. One thing I've noticed over the years is the attitude of other techs. I work for a large computer manufacturer. When techs call me for support, and the first thing they say is I have 30 years of experience with Windows 10 and 12 computer degrees. They are the most difficult call you can have. They usually spend days or weeks repeating the same two steps they know over and over and are completely frustrated. After 50 to 100 calls a week, the majority of these have to tell me their requirements and what I'm doing wrong. If I can get them to work with me, the issue is usually resolved very quickly. The majority of IT callers have ADD, usually installing multiple peripherals while working on a spreadsheet or installing some software at the same time. One person had 5 printer install programs running all at once. That's not that big a deal because printer installs take like an hour and a half a piece, so it's all good. They got time. Programmers usually blame firmware or driver bugs. When a computer does not work with Windows or is just dead, they want the newest firmware or driver. They think we would release a version that gives a computer no power, tested the firmware, but not for power. Because of this, whenever someone starts off with years of credentials, the fastest way I've found is to just shut up, let them do it their way first, show me it doesn't work, repeatedly if necessary, and then wait to do the real fix. Thanks for letting me get this off my chest. I don't mean to sound jaded, but a lifetime of this did have an effect on me, and I view guys that do computer repair differently now. I'll take a complete clueless user over some technical or someone technical almost every time. Patrick.
That is so true.
It is. We're, you know what? Not only are we narcissistic and all about ourselves and we know everything, it's a common trait, unfortunately. So sometimes, and I've been semi-guilty of this, like, for example, when I call up a cable provider and let them know, no, I'm not unplugging and plugging it back in again. I've already done that several times. I've already gone through all the steps. I'm directly plugged into my computer now. It's not going through my router. So I try to avoid the steps you have to go through. Now, there have been times in the past where I would just sit there and just, they'll tell me to do something. I go, and I'll just sit on the line while I'm typing something up on the computer. Yep, it's done. Yeah, lights are all back on now.
And it's funny that you say that because, like, I like to think of myself as, you know, semi-intelligent. And I was going up for a Synology seminar in Seattle. And I had a long drive all day. And I got to the hotel and I needed to answer a whole bunch of emails. And even the smartest people, like the dumbest decisions I had clicked on, and you get kind of this, and the more you're in IT, the more and more you don't read, you just inherently know where buttons are. And so you'll, okay, this is where closes, this is where accept is. Well, I get to the hotel and I go to get on the Wi-Fi. It's got the, you know, the user credential splash screen there. And it had a 2 check boxes, right? One was I accept the terms. One was I decline the terms, but they were reversed.
Yep.
Okay. And so I click decline, accept, and it goes rejected, no IP assigned. And I was like, what the heck? And I click it again and I do it. And I'm like, I walk up to the front desk and given I didn't even read it, okay, I just inherently in my brain knew that the accept button was pushed. I didn't even have to bother. I walk up, she goes, oh, you have to call this number. Right. And immediately when I get on the phone, I tell the guy, I say, hey, I'm just letting you know. We don't have to go through the standard, you know, reboot, turn it back on. I'm an IT professional. Like, I just need to know how to get on this. He goes, okay, well, go ahead and go to the splash screen. He's a really nice guy. It was just probably some MSP service that was assigned to that hotel. And he goes, okay, did you click accept? And I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, it's the second button down. It says accept. And I went, yeah, it wasn't working. It's working now. Wow, that's weird. All right, thanks, bud. Later. And I just, it's no matter how smart you are, you're not.
Yeah.
And it's so true. And I felt so dumb after that. I'm like, I am the world, literally the world's biggest end user right now. And I felt so bad. I didn't even want to get on my computer to answer emails. I'm like, I'm doing support requests and I just needed help getting on the Wi-Fi. Like, wow.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes you do have to take a step back. And especially when you're calling somebody, especially on a customer's behalf, you're calling for that support. You need to understand that those people, there are people there, not all of them are buffoons. There are some people there that actually know what they're doing, and they will be more than willing to help you. I would say if you get a call like that and a person's not willing to help you or they're hard to work with, I think it would be okay at that point. You hang up, you recall it back, and let somebody else answer the phone until you get that right person. Because we've all had the support calls that you get the right person and they bend over backwards. They get your problem resolved. And then you've got the people that are just kind of, again, for what they're getting paid, they're just going through the motions. And you understand. It's what can I really expect? You're answering these calls all day long and it gets frustrating. So, all right. I think with the Marvin, were you going to say something?
We all have stories about that. I did have a very similar story with a customer that had, I won't say the name of the provider, but it was a voice over IP provider.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, all three of their faxes were not working. And connected to ATA devices, customer calls me and I say, well, all your phones are working, so it's not that. Your internet's working, it's not that. Call the provider. So she calls. The provider, you know, is trying to get her to do this, and she knows not to unplug or reboot anything anymore unless I say it's okay. So they call back, get me on the phone, and I'm on with the tech. And the first thing he asks, so what's changed in your network? I'm like, nothing. We went through the song and dance, and I said, look, you can go through your checklist or do whatever it is you got to do. But I'm going to tell you, nothing has changed on that network for 18 months. I told them everything we've done and all of that stuff. And after an hour, they couldn't get them to work. So I basically end up telling the guy, because he was insistent that it was our network. And I wasn't going to bring this up, but I have to. I basically told the guy, listen, I will go over to their office. I will run my network test with my tester. I will have a report for you showing that everything is working on the network. I will send it to you. Then you tell me, you know, what to do from there. So I went over, took my tester, did the thing. Next day we called in. We got a different tech. And the first thing I said to him is, did you read all the notes from yesterday? He goes, yes. He goes, but I said, don't tell me what you need to do unless it's ready to do. So he finally was able to say, okay, I see where he did this. I said, you know, do I need to send over this report? It's 82 pages. And he goes, let me ask you, did he do this? And I said, no, he did not. He goes, can we at least try this? I said, yes, we can. I had no problem, you know, because he was willing to at least listen to me,
right,
and offer up another solution. Turns out his solution was fine. He did it on a test. It worked. He goes, let's do this to the other two, make sure they're working. I was happy to be on the phone with them. Again, another hour. But I was able, you know, to explain to him, don't try to tell me it's my network.
Right.
I've been on the other side too, where did you turn it off and turn it back on? And the customers, like I said, they're so afraid to do that unless they get me on the phone and I tell them while the tech's on the phone, yes, you can reboot the router.
Right. Yeah. It's hard. So again, don't be mean to everybody when you're calling in for tech support. I've had it where I've let somebody remote into my system from a brand name software, whom I won't mention, and it was broken on my system. I had done all the things that I could think of to do, uninstall, reinstall, all that kind of stuff. Still, there was one thing where I couldn't get it to work. I actually couldn't get it to see the file structure, which was odd because it was working the week prior. And so I called up, guy spent an hour and a half going through all the little stuff. He said, I might have to move this up to the engineer level support. I'm like, really? Okay. So they did that, gave me another date. They called in, spent another hour and a half on my computer, still couldn't fix it. Had me do a file dump of 12 gigs and send it to them. Now, fortunately, I have enough bandwidth. It's not a huge deal. I was able to FTP it up to their server, whatever. They mulled through there. Yep, there's a problem. And I'm like, really? I mean, they went in, they were using some program to uninstall this piece of software and to get all the things out of the registry and stuff like that. So I got frustrated and I said, you know what? I'm going to dig down deep and I'm going to find out what's going on. So long story short, I went in, solved the problem. And when they were called back for my third appointment, I said, I already got it fixed. Really? Hey, can you send us what you did to fix that problem? Because we're going to add that to our process now. I said, sure. You know, because I don't want to be a jerk, but it's like, really? So again, on the other side too, technicians or you support people that are dealing with technicians, kind of feel out who you're talking to and see if you can get that back and forth going.
Look for, you know, what you look for in a help desk or phone support person is kind of what we look for in our employees too, right?
Right.
A tech who's willing to listen to us and who's willing to, you know, admit, hey, you know what? Hadn't seen this before, or it's not in our playbook.
Right.
Let's think outside the box and try something else. So as long as they're willing to do that, I'm fine. It's the ones that, I got to go through this step by step.
Yeah. No, I can't stand that. All right. We got the last 8 minutes here. Let's take this in. Marvin, this email is specifically for you. Yes.
Is it about the big yellow box?
It has something to do with the big yellow box, but you, I think you can, within 5 minutes or less, probably have a few answers for us.
Okay.
It says, hi, Jeff. I really enjoy the show and appreciate the hard work you and everyone puts into each episode. My question is for Marvin. You have mentioned that there are network tool vendors other than Fluke. Can you elaborate and comment on other tools, particularly handheld ones? Thank you, Pete. Appreciate the email, Pete. And so what other tools, and I know we've been talking about this in a few other groups of stuff that's out there that's comparable to what Fluke does. And so what are some other brands out there that somebody could look for if they didn't want to spend the premium dollar, so to speak?
Well, good question. Well, here's probably, I'm only going to mention one. And I'll mention one specifically because most of what the techs have been looking for that we've been discussing are cable testing and what we call basic active network testing. You know, not only is the cable good, but will it connect to the DHCP server, the DNS server? Can I get an internet connection? Will it tell me what port it's connected to the switch? So I know I just answered this. Was it yesterday when I answered this?
I think so. Group? Yeah.
But the one page that I can tell you guys to go through is t3innovation.com. And that's the letter T, the number 3, innovation.com. And that is a set of tools that, like the big yellow box, will do both network testing and cable testing. Specifically, the products that I would refer to would be, there's one called the NetProwler and one called the NetChaser.
Okay.
They're pretty much the same tool with a couple of little differences. One is just pretty much a tester, and then one is a certifier, where it will not only, you know, test the cable, but it'll tell you what speed that the cable is rated for, whether it's, you know, 10, 100 gigabit, and it will do some other testing on the cables in terms of, you know, signal strength, BERT testing, things of that nature. So now, to some degree, they're cheaper than the big yellow box, but they're more expensive than the little yellow box. So if there was a order in which I'd tell people to get stuff, we've talked about the Fluke Link Sprinter, and that's pretty much your basic entry level. The Model 300 is what I would recommend that everybody gets, $399. Then I would look at the T3 products, because those are going to be anywhere from $600 to $1,200 that will get you in, test the cable, and do those basic network testing for you. They've got a nice bright screen in terms of giving you, you know, whether the cable's good, all of that stuff. And then you move up to the rest of the yellow box program products, I guess.
So that's kind of an in-between.
Fluke as well, or the Link Sprinter. I've been using that for 3 years. I said that exact model. And I think
it's you came in soft there, Rob.
No, sorry about that. I can actually vouch for that Link Sprinter, man. That thing is 3 years solid for me. That thing is a little rock star. I love having that in my back pocket. Yep.
So the T3 is more that's the in-between, or the T3 innovations, the two models there. That's the in-between going from basically the $400 unit to a $600 unit and then to the Fluke $1,500 unit.
Well, the net Prowler is the in-between. The Net Chaser is pretty much on the same lines as the Fluke Link Runner, which is at $1,500 mark.
Okay.
So the Net Chaser is that $600 one that will do all of the network testing. It is more of it's a bigger handheld unit than the Link Sprinter. The Link Sprinter literally can fit in your pocket.
Okay.
The Net Chaser, like the Link Runner, fits in your hand pretty comfortably. The One Touch is the big boy that, while it fits in your hand, it's a big boy. It's right. Hefty. and that's most techs aren't going to want to go to that one. Although, if you had to choose one, that's the one I would choose. But for just starting out, you know, the Link Sprinter and one of the T3 products, pick whichever one you think works best for you. The $600 product is a good product. If I had to say choose between the Link Runner and the Net Chaser, or the Net Prowler, I'd say go with the T3, Net Chaser, and Net Prowler.
Okay. And we will have links to all that in the show notes. So very cool. And do you buy your Flukes directly from Fluke, Marvin? I don't know if I've ever asked you that.
No, I do not. I buy them through distribution.
Okay. All right. And
anybody, they're not exclusive products. You don't have to go to a reseller. You know, I have resold. But okay. You can go through CDW to get a lot of these products. So it's, you know, there's another site, Tech. I'll find it and I'll put it in the link there for you. It's a tech tool supply company that you can get these products through as well.
All right. Very cool. Sounds good. Yep. We'll have those links in the show notes so you guys can check that out. Well, I think we've had a very full show and a lot of good information on the hiring and what to look for in techs and answering those wonderful emails. Keep them coming. Rob, if people wanted to find out more about what you're up to with not only your business, but also with BusyBench, which is a product for IT providers, where would you send them?
Well, we're accepting smoke signals now. So if you want to start a small fire and just kind of, you can reach out to me at Robert at BusyBench.com or Robert at uppercasecs.com or Robert at just about any product we have.com. But yeah, I am habitual about responding to emails. I actually responded to an email at 4:30 last night. My phone buzzed and it woke me up and I was like, oh, I'll answer it. So if you guys ever need anything, just feel free to reach out. I love correspondence.
Yeah, Rob is definitely an open book when it comes to that stuff. He loves that. I haven't talked to him in a while just because business is on both his and my part. But I did email him last minute. I think it was on a Friday. And I said, hey, would you be interested in coming on the show? And he said, yeah, I can do that. Sundays are my day off. I know you're working on a project with a friend of yours, but definitely appreciate you taking the time to come out and share.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely love everything that the show does. So anytime I get invited, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm making time for that.
Appreciate it. And Marvin, where can people find you at?
Start off at my website, mbsystems.net. M as in Mary, B as in boy, systems with an S. And you'll find my Google Plus thingy there and my LinkedIn thingy there.
That apparently you don't do anything with. Or do you have people that do that?
No, I put the unconvention stuff on there.
Oh, am I not hooked up with you on LinkedIn? I'll have to look at that later.
Well, I don't know. I don't do it on LinkedIn.
Oh, I gotcha. On the Google Plus.
I use things differently than most of the rest of the people. My LinkedIn is, you know, I have my professional stuff through there, right. But I usually just do the messaging there. The Google Plus, I'll post on there every now and then. And I actually do the Facebook thing, but I don't link that to the business.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of more personal. See, that's the way it should be. I agree with all those ways. All right, come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. Send your questions and feedback to podnuts@podnuts.com. We enjoy every one of them. Leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162 and you'll get played on the show. Your voicemail will, just so you know. Please consider supporting this show by going to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. Definitely appreciate all those that are supporting us. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.